Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
$800 billion, I think we have to say that again, $800 billion and counting for an industry that is still growing in size is impressive.
Todd, bold prediction right off the bat. Michigan or Ohio State? Who wins? And I'll tell you, I'm showing the early line is currently Ohio State favored by 8.5 points. So what say you?
Well, first of all, it's at Ohio State. So let's get that out of the way. So it's a road game for Michigan. My heart tells me that Michigan is going to win. My head tells me that I need to follow my heart, that Michigan is going to win. It will make my life easier. It'll make my family life easier. I bleed maize and blue, as people probably know. So big weekend after a wonderful Thanksgiving for everybody that's listening.
You guys beat Ohio State last year and then went on to the college football playoffs, correct?
That is correct. Yeah. So hopefully they can do it two in a row. Prior to last year, there was a bit of the pendulum swung against Michigan. It's now swung back towards Michigan. Hopefully it stays another year, if not longer.
Well, should be a fun game for everybody to watch. Any big plans for Thanksgiving this week?
I'll be with some family in Long Island. I live in New York City, as people may know, so we'll take the train out to Long Island. We typically do on Wednesdays. They blow up the balloons near my apartment, near Central Park, for the Macy's Parade, and we've been doing that with my son since he was 1 year old. We have a photo that we take with me holding my son for the last, he's now 12, so more than a decade. He's too heavy, I think, for me to hold for very long, but we'll try to get that in for one last time. A 12-year-old probably has less interest in spending time with his parents the day before Thanksgiving. Certainly a 13-year-old definitely does.
Well, nevertheless, I would imagine Thanksgiving in New York sounds wonderful to me. A great place to be. Okay, on the note of things.
Wait, I have to ask you. You do like a barbecue of like a turducken or something pretty cool, if my memory is correct, yes?
So I will be smoking a full bird, probably, 22 to 24 pounds. It's become an annual tradition. So yes, I'll be doing that. It's not a turducken. It's just a traditional turkey, but I've gotten pretty good at smoking those things. So I'll do that. I'll certainly watch some football, some college basketball. And honestly, Todd, I think just relax a little bit. I know everybody says this, but it's just been an extremely busy last few months. So I'm just hoping to downshift a little bit.
Here's hoping you do.
Okay. So on the note of Thanksgiving, you published a fun piece yesterday. This was titled Thankful Times in the ETF Industry. And you highlighted several ETF items that we all should be thankful for this year, despite a very difficult market environment. And I want to go through these because I thought you did a really nice job of actually capturing some of the year's biggest ETF stories. And so what I thought I would do, let me tee each of these up, and then you can offer some color here and we can bat these around a little bit. Now, the first item you noted is that ETFs have already gathered over $500 billion in assets this year. So I'll just ask you, what are you thankful about here besides the fact that this is very good for both of our careers?
Right. So we've long heard and people say that volatility and bear markets is a good thing for the ETF industry. But a lot of that history was in 2008 when there was far fewer people who were investing in ETFs. It's a $6 trillion ETF market. It seems harder that the adoption can continue, but money keeps moving from mutual funds to ETFs. So let's break that down, the equity and the fixed income portion. Money has consistently been moving out of equity mutual funds year after year and into ETFs. I'm using ICI data, and that's happening again in 2022. Through mid-November, $335 billion flowed out of equity mutual funds, and $365 billion flowed into equity ETFs. Not exactly a one-for-one. Some of that money is moving to something else, probably, but that's a great sign. But it's the fixed income market that I know we've talked about on this podcast and you've talked about with others. where money continues to move in 2022 for the first time really ever out of fixed income mutual funds. $475 billion has been pulled out of it. This is the worst bond year for the Barclays Ag, I think, in history, and certainly in my investment lifetime, perhaps yours as well. And $165 billion has flowed into fixed income ETFs. So I'm thankful that advisors and investors are continuing to gravitate towards ETFs. They're not trying to time the market. They're actually continuing to allocate to some of the building block products like the iShares Core S&P 500 ETF and Vanguard Total Stock Market ETF, but that they're finding new choices within the fixed income marketplace, either ultra safe products like the treasury products like SHY from iShares and BIL from State Street, but also they're using the wide array of tools that are at their disposal that they didn't have beforehand.
Yeah, and I think to your point, Todd, look, on the equity side, not a huge surprise. We've seen this movie before. When there's turbulence in the markets, that tends to bode well for ETFs overall. We've seen that like clockwork following the global financial crisis. We saw it in 2018 when the Fed tried hiking rates. We saw it again following the COVID crash. So that's not necessarily surprising. It's the fixed income side, which is just eye-opening to see those flows out of bond mutual funds and into bond ETFs. And I know, to your point, it's not one-to-one, but that's shocking to see. But, you know, my take on this, just overall, you look at the flows this year, that over $500 billion, it will end up being the second best year ever behind last year. And I look even here recently. So you may have seen Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas tweeted this out on Friday. He said ETFs took in $113 billion over the past 4 weeks, with $42 billion coming in the past week. And he said clearly investors were ready to get bullish and support a rally. And I replied to that. I was just looking at some data. $235 billion has come into ETFs just over the past 90 days. So think about that. I mean, if you extrapolate that out, and I know you can't always do that, I mean, you're talking about a nearly $1 trillion pace if you move that forward. And I'll tell you now, this may or may not be one of my five predictions for 2023. I think, you know, every year I put together five predictions for 2023. But I do think we're going to see over $1 trillion in inflows next year, assuming the markets just don't absolutely crater. And, you know, I think after this year, nobody has a crystal ball. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, as long as we don't see a repeat of this year or worse, I think that ETFs are going to eclipse that $1 trillion mark. So, yeah, I think no question this is a big ETF story.
Yeah, I second that $1 trillion expectation for 2023. You came in, or I got teased on with the $800 billion and counting comment that I made in late 2021. $500 billion and counting during the middle of a equity bear market, a fixed income bear market with a potential recession on the horizon, is just tremendous. It just shows that in a normal time, assuming we can think of what a normal time in the equity and fixed income market is, we've got a lot of headroom ahead for the ETF industry.
Okay, so the second item that you noted you're thankful for is that more well-established asset managers have embraced ETFs. And this is something, again, I know you and I have discussed at least a few times this year, this parade of big names entering the ETF space. But just give us a little more color here. Why did this stand out to you?
Yeah, so in my former life, before I joined VettaFi, I was the head of mutual fund and ETF research, and we had this group of traditional ETF providers. We had this traditional group of traditional mutual fund providers and a few firms with some overlap. You know, Invesco, for example, JP Morgan entering the ETF market was a Goldman Sachs and T. Rowe Price. Those were starting signs of ETF adoption by traditional asset managers. That's really happened in 2022. So Capital Group, the firm behind American Funds, launched its first 9 ETFs in 2022, starting in February. They're approaching $5 billion already in a very short amount of time. The Capital Group Dividend Value ETF has already gathered $1 billion. We've had firms like AllianceBernstein and DoubleLine and Matthews Asia roll out products in the piece that you referenced earlier on ETF trends. I cited some of those. So YEAR is the AllianceBernstein Ultra Short Income ETF, fixed income product, Matthews Asia Innovation ETF, MINV. Those are just two of the products from firms that you think of within the active world entering into the ETF market. So there's some folks in the ETF space that are committed to index investing. There are some folks that have long been committed to active management, and they've primarily stayed within the mutual fund world because there just weren't a whole lot of choices for them. Now, as an advisor, you can truly choose whether or not you want an ETF or a mutual fund from some of your favorite active management firms. So I'm thankful for that. There's more smart people in the space.
Yeah, and we think we're going to cap the year here with another huge name in Morgan Stanley, right? Is the expectation still that those products will launch here in the next few weeks?
Yes, that's my expectation. They updated a filing this week, I believe, with tickers, not expense ratios. So that's usually the last thing that comes in. But an updated filing with tickers shows we're moving forward with these ESG products from Morgan Stanley. So yeah, that's the largest next player. I think we did a prior podcast trying to forecast who's next. So people should listen to that one. But yeah, Morgan Stanley's coming likely in December. If not, I guess it could fall into January, early January.
Okay. So on the other end of the spectrum from these big brand names, the third item that you're thankful for, which I really like this one, Todd, is that advisors have been willing to try working with lesser known ETF issuers. And I think, you know, I've always said that smaller upstart issuers, that in my mind is where the innovation occurs, right? They're the incubators in the ETF space. So I'm just curious on this one, was there a certain product or products that stood out to you this year? What made you flag this one?
Yeah, so I think if we were trying to think of what is this surprise ETF for 2022, the Managed Futures ETF, DBMF, from the firm IMGP DBI. That's a mouthful to be able to say. But the ETF ticker is DBMF, is perhaps the example of a small ETF can have success if it fits the right niche. And a Managed Futures ETF that's performing well in this environment where equity and fixed income is out of favor. This ETF has gathered $1 billion alone in 2022. That's probably not a big deal if you're BlackRock or Vanguard or even State Street for one of your ETFs. But the ETF now has $1.1 billion in assets. So it went from almost nothing and gathered $1 billion in 2022. So I wanted to call that one out. It reminded me of an ETF that came out in 2021 from Horizon Kinetics because they have filed to launch another ETF coming out, but their existing product, INFL, which is Inflation Beneficiary ETF, launched in 2021. It already has $1.4 billion in assets in energy, materials, financial stocks. I think, you know, I'm a big believer that age doesn't matter in the ETF space. A good ETF is a good ETF, regardless if it's 3 years old or not. And so it just excites me that investors are adopting some of these products early in their life cycle. And so I'm thankful for these firms to put their products out there and to see advisors have a chance to adopt them early without having all the gatekeepers stop them.
No, I completely agree, Todd. And, you know, again, this is really where the true entrepreneurs in the ETF space are. And it does take bravery. It's a tough market. Again, the terror dome. So to launch a new product and stand by it and, you know, I don't know that hope's the right word, but, you know, hope that it has success, that's a tough thing to do. And I had Andrew Baer on earlier in the year, who's behind DBMF. And it was just, I love talking to him because you could feel the energy that he was so happy that finally people were seeing the value behind something that, you know, he put his blood, sweat, and tears into. And I actually think DBMF is probably the ETF of the year. We'll figure that over the next month or so. But no, I love that. Something else that I'll throw out is that, and I know you noted this in the article, the big three, so Vanguard, iShares, State Street, they control about 80% of the market, but that hasn't stopped new entrants. And I'll tell you that I put together periodically a pie chart of the ETF market share percentage. in that there's a little sliver for other, right? So I may list like the 10 or 15 largest ETF issuers, but over the past few years, if you look, that little sliver of other has slowly grown. And you love to see that. So, okay, I want to get to a survey that Vettafi ran, but I do want to just ask you, Todd, on more of a personal note. I know you said that you were thankful to have joined the firm that became Vettafi in 2022. So this has been an eventful year for you professionally, in a good way, right? But certainly a lot of change. Would you like to briefly comment on that?
Sure. Well, thanks for the opportunity to do so. You know, I spent 20 years at CFRA, or the S&P group that was moved into CFRA, doing stock and ETF and mutual fund research. So I hadn't been bouncing around, and nothing against people who do that within their career. So this was a big move for me to join what became Vettafi. I'm really happy. I'm working with smart people across various verticals, webcasts, marketing, research, the sales team, a lot of folks that are behind the scenes from a back office capabilities. I'm really excited and thankful to be there. And we're also, as I know you and the listeners know, because you're helping us raise awareness about it, the Exchange ETF Conference in 2023 is something that we're building towards. And I'm thankful to be part of the team that's helping put together that agenda. So I'm excited about that, but thankful for what's ahead and thankful to be able to talk about great data with you.
No, 100%. And I'll just add to that, that for my perch, it's been really fun to watch everything at Vettafi this year. It's been amazing to see just everything come together with a brand, to see the quality of content that is now being published and talked about on a daily basis. It's been a lot of fun to watch, Todd. So very happy for you. Okay.
Thank you.
With our remaining time, let's switch gears. And I want to cover just a couple other ETF topics that caught my attention recently. And this first one is this piece that you wrote last week where you noted advisors are seeking downside protection. And again, obviously, it's been a very difficult year in the markets. And so Vettafi surveyed advisors on what their biggest goal for clients was over the next 6 months. Do you want to just briefly walk us through the results of that? And then maybe we can talk about a few ETF takeaways as well.
Sure. So this is something we regularly are talking with advisors through our webcast program and ask them questions unrelated to the specific ETFs that are talked about. So it's fodder for a research guy like myself. And the majority, 56%, chose the answer to, quote, mitigate their exposure to market volatility and downside risk. So that was a defensive approach to it. That was higher than the bolster portfolios against recession or a more offensive approach to tax loss harvest for clients. And so I decided to spin that into, here's some options if you are wanting to play some defense but still be part of the equity marketplace. And that went with some of the obvious choices, perhaps, of lower volatility ETFs. So the iShares MSCI USA Minvol Factor ETF, USMV, and the Invesco S&P 500 low volatility ETF, SPLV. And we talked about the differences between those products that I won't belabor on here, but those are products that have been gaining traction. They've been around for years. But I know you're actually talking with somebody tied to covered call strategies, later on in this program. And this has been a year for covered call strategies. So JEPI, the JP Morgan Equity Premium Income ETF, and the Global X S&P 500 covered call ETF XYLD are two very popular products in 2022. They haven't been around a long time, but very popular, give you the equity exposure, but that income component through covered call strategies. And they've held up better. And then lastly, walk through some of those defined outcome buffer ETFs from Innovator and Allianz. So three different ways, not the only ways, but three different ways to play defense and to reduce the downside risk of a portfolio that advisors told us they were most interested in.
Yeah. And I'll just add to that, Todd, I ran some performance data this morning. And what's nice to see is that these have all worked in this environment. So you look this year, SPY, the S&P 500, is down about 16%. USMV is down 8%. SPLV only down about 5%. You look at JEPI, only down 3%. And something else I'll note about JEPI, you look at that, Todd, I mean, almost $11 billion has gone into that product this year. That's in the top 10 of all ETFs in terms of inflow. So it shows you advisors are looking for some risk mitigation strategies. The other thing that I'll note here is on the defined outcome ETFs, the buffer ETFs. You look at somebody like Innovator, who's the largest player in the space, that firm is now over $10 billion in assets. They've only been around for about 4 years. So again, I just think another good example of the fact that advisors and investors are looking for ways to mitigate their exposure to market volatility and downside risk. So no, I like that survey. You know, I love getting real-time data from advisors on what they're actually doing in portfolios. So love that. Okay, I think as you know, I have Bitwise's Matt Hogan on deck here to talk crypto and crypto ETFs. So before I let you go, I have to ask you about a spot Bitcoin ETF. Don't strangle me. And I would say, Todd, I feel like you have been bearish on the prospects for a spot Bitcoin ETF for a long time now. That's not new. And I'm just curious, as you've watched this entire debacle unfold with FTX and really some of the other very negative headlines we've seen across the crypto space this year, are you even more bearish now on the prospects for a spot Bitcoin ETF, or has anything at all changed around your thinking here?
Well, I think, I mean, Matt Hogan's closer to this than I am, because he's been proposing to have one at his, from his firm Bitwise. So he'll have more inside baseball. Maybe he won't give it all to you and the audience on it. My bearishness, if that's the right choice of words, skepticism that a product would come to market largely comes from the SEC's own statements that they've said their concerns about fraud and manipulation. I'm paraphrasing. And we certainly have seen evidence of potential fraud and manipulation taking place within the crypto marketplace. So it's hard for me to believe that the SEC is going to see this and say, yes, we now need to allow something that we were concerned about just so people can do it within the ETF space instead of doing it outside of the ETF space. So I think, I was skeptical that we'd have a futures-based product. I was wrong on that one. So I, of course, give myself the out that I may be wrong, but I don't think we're going to see a spot Bitcoin ETF in 2023. I'll go with that statement. I'm not sure we'll see one so soon after that, but I'll go with 2023. I'll put my marker down. We will not have a spot Bitcoin ETF in the United States.
I love it. You heard it here first from Todd. Here's the only, if I'm looking for a silver lining, I'll just say that clearly the FTX situation would speak to the need for better or greater regulation around crypto exchanges, which we know SEC Chair Gary Gensler has said is a prerequisite for a spot Bitcoin ETF. And so if this entire situation helps accelerate the regulation of crypto exchanges, then I would say theoretically that may accelerate the timeline for a spot Bitcoin ETF. But I hear what you're saying. It's so funny because I think if you go back, I've been doing this podcast for 12 years now. I bet in 10 of those, I predicted a spot Bitcoin ETF. So maybe this will be the year I don't do that, so I don't have to, eat a dollar bill or whatever. But Todd, great stuff as always. I hope you and your family enjoyed the Thanksgiving holiday. Thank you for joining me this week.
Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it. Hope everybody signs up for Exchange and gets the savings while they can.
That was Todd Rosenbluth, head of research at Vettafi.